This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Welcome back to PTBN's NBA Team Podcast. I am one of your co-hosts, Andrew Reich. I am not, once again, joined by my co-host, Adam Murray. He is still out touring Russia or the UK or Dublin, Ireland, or watching curling in Canada again or wherever he is. But unfortunately, I wasn't able to get a guest host today, so I'm going to actually just have to go solo for this since everybody knows that they want to that they would love to listen to me. So let's go ahead and just get started with this.
Did you already start already? I said I'm back, I'm ready to go, and then, you know, you disappear for a month to go watch college basketball. It's cool. I said, yo, give me 2 minutes, let me get set up, and then all of a sudden you're now up and running, and I've been ready to go. I'm waiting. Coach. I'm ready to play.
How did you get on this fucking call?
I have an open line.
But I thought you were dead.
I have the secret PTBN line. I just dial directly in. I'm ready to go, and, you know, I'm standing by.
Well, the spiel's over, so let's go ahead and welcome back Adam Murray. Did you bring communism back, or maybe some kind of little Russian toys?
Oh, yeah, I got all sorts of
Andre Kirilenko jersey.
You know, surprisingly, there were actually Brooklyn Nets stuff. I figured nobody would care, but I saw more Brooklyn Nets than the usual couple Kobe jerseys, couple LeBron.
Well, there are
no
Brooklyn Nets fans in the United States, so they had to get all
this out. The one thing I can say is I did meet a cult at Stonehenge, so that was interesting.
No, I have heard about that. I remember reading a very randomly going to a Stonehenge Wikipedia entry. And they talked about how a lot of cults like to go there.
Druidism is a full religion, and part of Stonehenge is it's open. So
it wasn't one of those weird Heaven's Gatey things, huh?
No, it was just like there were like 10 old ladies, and they were like holding hands, walking backwards in a circle, and they were reading some book like "The Sun is the East and the Moon is the West." And they'd all turn to the right, and you know, me and my wife are just like, "What the hell is going on here? This is just weird."
And the old lady took off the mask, and it was Sam Hinkie.
Trust the process.
Did you read the manifesto? We'll get to him later, but I just had to ask. Did you read the manifesto?
No. Oh,
it's brilliant. It's brilliant. It's absolutely brilliant. You know, Sam Hinkie wrote a,
Yeah, 20-page.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's quoting everyone. That's not something that a sane person does, is write and start quoting 50 people about how he was right. And
it makes David Kahn look like Jerry West. I'll put it that way.
You know, I remember, you know, unfortunately I left before, you know, all this happened, but it was just like you undermined all your credibility and people were defending you with your 12-page crazy person note. Mm-hmm.
So were you able to listen to our fill-ins? And I have to thank everybody who filled in to help out while Adam was away, you know, in this pivotal time where the playoffs had started. Norman Rockwell, Ryan Arena, two of my buds, and then Todd Weber, who does a lot of the Place to Meet Nation stuff, along with Terrell Robinson, a friend of mine also, and Will from Texas for the Spurs one. So I thank all of them. Were you able to catch any of those great episodes?
I will not lie. They are downloaded on my phone. I am just so far behind. I've been trying
to
catch up.
You're far behind on your own show?
It's all I do is just listen. I have like literally like 20 episodes of just everything to listen to. So of all the stuff I do. So it's on there. I'm going to get to it. But
well, that's actually a good segue because, I mean, when you have the kind of situation in which you're trying to catch up with content and watch stuff, you know, you think of Netflix, binge watching, you know, going through the weekend and going through every episode that you can, trying to take in everything. And this subject for all these teams that we're going to be talking about to give away the topic is going to be Netflix and chill. Define Netflix and chill for me.
No.
it's sort of a popular.
It's not what you think it means, so we're just gonna, we'll just take the literal definition of you're watching Netflix and doing nothing. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, we'll keep it clean. Yeah, that's what it means, sure.
Well, you know, Netflix and chill, sometimes people think of leisure, you know, in the same vein. Like last year we had done Gone Fishing, which was made famous by, you know, all the boys over there at Inside the NBA, Kenny Smith, Charles Barkley. You know, it's just sort of a like a replacement definition for you're not doing nothing, your season's over. And so we're going to be doing Netflix and chill for all these teams in the Western Conference and the Eastern Conference for this section of the topic. For this episode, we're going to be talking about the Western Conference. You know, before we dive in, I just want to get your general thoughts on the playoffs. I wasn't able to get I was only able to get some of your predictions which were predictably not that unpredictable. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it was, well, what's going to happen? The Spurs and the will be unwatchable, and, you know, pretty much most of them just sort of been blah, and even, you know, when
that
the Rockets...
That Spurs-Memphis series has been unwatchable.
Yeah, and everything else is just like, there's, you know, there's really... 7 games is too much for the first round. They brought it back for money, but... Just watching these, it's like I really don't care about any of these.
The Pistons are dead man walking. The Mavericks game 2 win is probably like the flukiest win in NBA first round history. You know, because if you've watched the 2 games after that, I mean, the Thunder are clearly like they literally might be twice as good as the Mavericks. Twice as good.
Well, Mavericks have no one left.
They have nobody. Darren Williams with the hip and or the hernia, I think it is. And then Nowitzki's kind of banged up. Barea's banged up. Now they have to play Majiri inside. It's just it's been rough going. I know why they won game 2. Kevin Durant like shot like less than 30%.
Yeah, he shot horrible, and you know it's just Durant and Westbrook. We see really they're not everything everybody tries to make them up to be. Yeah. So
Detroit's done. With you know Cleveland. Eliminating them is not a shock. Pacers, Raptors, interesting. We'll keep an eye out. Boston, Atlanta, kind of interesting. We're still in the early stages there. Charlotte finally actually got a playoff win. We'll see if they do anything else with it because in the first 2 games they got destroyed in Miami by the Heat. And I'm trying to think of some of the other ones. Clippers, Blazers. We knew that would probably be the closest of the Western Conference series, and it is. Curry. Oh. Curry was in shutdown mode because they were pressing their luck to make sure they could win games. Then they lost a game, and now Curry's back. So
yeah, and the thing about the Clippers is Blake Griffin does not look healthy or good, or there looks something wrong with
him. His stats were good in the first 2 games, but yeah, he doesn't see.
Well, you just watch him; he doesn't pass that eye test. Like
yeah,
there's something
tentative. Yeah.
Something's up there, but, you know, we're not talking about the good teams now, even though we did mention Memphis, and sadly they're a good team in this list, but...
Yeah, so, yeah, great intro there. We're not here to talk about good things. We're here to talk about bad things. But let's go ahead and start at the bottom of the barrel in the Western Conference. We'll move on up based on win-loss record. And the worst record in the Western Conference was the Los Angeles Lakers at a very stingingly putrid 17-65. I know you're a giant Laker fan. I know you are crushed that Kobe Bryant's career is over, Adam Murray. So just give it to me here. Let's try to keep this with the Netflix connection and try to find something here.
Well, the thing is,
if there was a movie, what would the Lakers watch?
Oh, the Lakers story would just be Titanic, because it was just a complete train wreck. All you know, it was just a disaster every which way. From you know, okay, Kobe had his moment, but as much as you know, I you know, we talk about how selfish he is and how it was just me first, but it's sort of like, well, now you're a shell, and the team they give you for your farewell tour is the most god-awful team you could possibly put together.
And that's a good one, because everyone knew the Titanic was going to sink. That was, like, literally the subject of it. Like, hey, let's watch this boat sink, but let's see love and adventure along the way. But there was no love and adventure in L.A. That was the thing. It was just all misery and sadness.
Well, one person who won't be Netflix and chilling will be Nick Young, so.
No, he'll just be chilling. Yeah, Kobe Bryant, statistically, probably the worst season he's ever had, worse than his rookie year. I think points per game-wise, you know, with the he had the 60-point game, which I know that you were pretty fond of, huh?
Yeah, on 50 shots.
Yeah, was that like the most, like, Kobe-esque performance you'll ever see?
That's what I expect. You know, I'd expect nothing less for him to go out on that. You know, I would have been like, it would have been hilarious if he just, like his last game, he just have 20 assists or something, some weird stuff. But yeah, 50 shots, that's what you...
Like that one that Plumlee had where he had like 9 points, 21 rebounds, and 9 assists just recently.
Yeah,
it's just like, what? But Kobe Bryant, 17 points a game, less than 4 rebounds, less than 3 assists, and his career, his very, albeit fantastic, unbelievable, all-time great career is over, and now we're moving on to the next generation here. But we do still have a few decisions here to be made in terms of the makeup of their team. You talked about their makeup at, you know, after Kobe and how it wasn't really that great. They signed over Lou Williams, and even though statistically he was solid, he definitely had. You know, a kind of a mediocre year. You had Julius Randle, who bounced back from his leg injury. He averaged a double-double, surprisingly. D'Angelo Russell really started out rough as a rookie, but he kind of guided his way through it at the end of the season. Did you see improvement out of D'Angelo Russell?
I didn't really see improvement. It's just sort of, he was there and he was getting his numbers, but, you know, the team was, you could tell he wasn't coached, and really, you know, this guy should be fired, and they need somebody who's going to work with these kids. And, you know, you can say you have all the money in the world, but nobody, it's a weak free agent class, and nobody's going to want to come there anyways.
Jordan Clarkson's an interesting case. He was a second-round pick, which means he's either a restricted or unrestricted free agent. I'm not sure the exact nature of his contract going forward. But what it is for Jordan Clarkson is he had a very, very good year. I mean, his rookie year was solid. You know, he had won Rookie of the Month, I believe, once in his rookie year. But this second season, you know, he was sort of the anchor guard for them when Kobe would struggle. He was more reliable as the guard than D'Angelo Russell is. How important is it for them to keep Clarkson?
I don't. The problem is they're three, really essentially they're three best players, because Randle, he got his rebounds, but those just seemed all garbage. He didn't pop like I think he was supposed to, having that year of learning.
He's got that left hand, but yeah, he's at 11 points per game. It's, you got to remember though, that was his first real season.
It was his first real season, but you know, he already knew, you know, he already had a redshirt year. Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, your three best guys are Lou Williams, Clarkson, and Russell, who are all the same position. So it's like the exact opposite of Philly, where you have these, like, you know, towards the end of the year, they're like, well, oh, Larry Nance is like a respectable player. I'm like, no, he's really just garbage right now and doesn't really do anything well.
Good segue with not doing anything well, because the Lakers, if you look at the team set, I mean, it is about as bad as you could possibly be on offense. Points per game, field goal percentage, assists, offensive efficiency, three-point percentage, 3 points. They were in the bottom. They were actually second to last or last in almost all of those categories except for three-pointers made. The only thing they did well was get to the free-throw line, and that was probably the Kobe respect factor with the referees that helped them out there. Points allowed defensively, 26. They were dead last in defensive efficiency. They just didn't do anything well. The Roy Hibbert experiment didn't work. Brandon Bass, you know, kind of disappeared all over again. Meta World Peace was just there for the Kobe ride. So there's just so many things to do here. We don't know about Byron Scott yet. Byron said he would like to stay, of course, because he needs a job. But I'm not sure what Genie Bus or you know, who's the other bus? Jimmy Bus is his name?
I don't.
There's like three or four buses. Yeah. It's like the Plumleys. It's like the NBA owner version of the Plumleys. There's like every time a bus goes away, another one pops up. But I don't know what the buses want to do with Byron Scott. So we're not sure. Do you think a change is absolutely necessary at the
Oh yes, spot? You need a coach who's not gonna. You know, Scott said the wrong thing every which way. And for a young team, you need somebody who's going to develop players, not this hardline veteran coach, because, you know, they're only right now they only have six people under contract for next year. So you need to put up nine roster spots.
Here's what I don't understand about these coaches. They let these players on the court get away with doing so many dumb things. You know, unnecessary things that can cost you games potentially, and, you know, bad habits that you can't shake. I mean, James Harden's a great example of that in Houston, albeit he's a superstar. But why are they such hardliners on shoot-arounds and practice times?
Because that was the old-school veteran mentality, and you have these old, you know, player coaches where, well, that's what we used to do back when, and that's what we used to learn. It's like, well, things have sort of changed. It's analytics. Oh, screw analytics. Nothing beats a big old shoot-around. It's like, well, you know, times have sort of changed. You don't have that big, slow guy center anymore. Everybody's a combo guard forward, and, mm-hmm. you know, this team really doesn't have much hope in the near future because... You know, their blueprint is sort of the Knicks. Don't get big free agents. You now need bench depth players. And then, you know, don't try to hit these home runs and, you know, oh, we're going to burrow out the carpet for Aldridge, who had, you know, we knew he wasn't coming, and but we'll still try. And we got nobody to replace him. And there's really no hope in the future for them. Really short term.
So free agency wise, because of Kobe is a free agent, but he's obviously out of the mix for good. So now you got Clarkson, then you got Brandon Bass, Roy Hibbert, Meta World Peace, Marcelo Huertas, you know, who they got for very, very cheap out of Brazil. Played pretty well. You know, he averaged 3 assists a game. Ryan Kelly, Robert Zachary, Tariq Black, everyone else is under contract at least through the year. Nick Young, a lot of people are talking about his, you know, his split off with D'Angelo Russell because of the Snapchat video that came out where he had gotten Nick Young to admit, you know, on video without him knowing that he was being taped, that he had cheated on his girlfriend, Iggy Azalea. And so that made a lot of TMZ, like, stuff. But we don't really know what's going to happen there. He's at least under contract through next summer. So I don't know if he's going to get moved. I mean, D'Angelo Russell.
He's untradeable. Nobody wants that personality. His numbers are horrible. He's gone down statistically this year.
He averaged less than 2 rebounds a game.
Yeah, and he has, you know, he has a player option. So he's there for 2 years. He has another $10 million. Nobody wants that contract. So they're stuck with him, and there's no, like I said, you need a coach who's going to work with players, not have that, well, all of them do what they want as long as they show up for practice.
Well,
so
you could do the buyout, but, you know, but that would come at the end of next year. Like,
yeah, that's the, but, like, you know, next year. See, the last 2 years they spent getting yard sale people like Xavier Henry and
Wesley Johnson.
Yeah, you spent your time getting cheap people who weren't going to do anything, so this is the roster you've given yourself, and so many teams have imploded and are trying to build up. It's no longer an option if 3 other teams are doing it. So
they have a lottery pick, but as everybody has known already because of the deal that they made with the Sixers through the Suns from the Steve Nash deal, they have to stay in the top 3 in order to keep it. I think it's likely they're going to wind up staying in the top 3. They're not going to drop out, you know, but the lottery is the lottery, you know. It's left somewhat to chance, but they have a really, really good chance of staying there. They have the second best chance outside of Philadelphia. They also have their number 32 pick. What do the Lakers absolutely need?
They need bodies. They need somebody who they could develop this core with. And you know, if you're Randall's improving, Russell's improving. Okay, so you need somebody to build around. You can't just take. It can't just be, well, we'll get the same guy who, you know, the best point guard.
Would you say like a slasher, a small forward?
They really need a 2, 3, and a 5 because if you're gonna go with, you know, Randall and Russell, so you don't need. You know, Dragon Bender won't really do anything if he plays the same position. And I don't, you know, their games don't really seem compatible at the moment.
And there's Simmons and Ingram, but we don't know about that yet. That will get to the draft time. I don't ever want to project rookies on something like this, because it's just it's.
Well, we'll wait till the lottery falls and see you know where things shake out, and then all the stupid players go back because you know we declared and well, no, where nobody wants us. Oh, let's go back and blah blah blah.
Okay, this is surprising. The second worst team in the Western Conference in terms of win loss record at 23-59 was actually the Phoenix Suns. Now, a couple of years ago, you know, when they had first hired Jeff Hornacek in 2013, if you had said that they were going to have like the worst record, the second worst record, or potentially the worst record, you would have said, "Oh yeah, you know, the Phoenix Suns are garbage." But then they surprised us with these two seasons in which they almost made the playoffs. They were, you know, they were on their way, and then they made a couple of really boneheaded trades at the 2015 trade deadline that really, really hurt them. They never really recovered from it. Eric Bledsoe got a knee injury, and then after that, Brandon Knight had a couple of injury situations, and Markieff Morris was incredibly unhappy after his twin brother was traded to Detroit. Jeff Hornacek was fired. They replaced him with Earl Watson. They just never, ever, ever got on the right track this past season.
Well, their main problem was obviously the GM, McDonough. All right, we blew up the team, but let's go do the exact same thing we did before. We, you know, Brandon Knight and Eric Bledsoe, well, that doesn't differ from Dragic and Bledsoe at all. That's the exact same player, same situation, and then... You know, now that Devin Booker shown that he could really be good, well, now what do you do? Because you have two players who really don't have the best contracts, and they're really the same player. You sort of have to hope some team gets desperate for them.
Do you see a little bit of hope here with Phoenix? You talked about Devin Booker having a really nice rookie year, had a couple of 30-point games. You know, TJ Warren's not a bad player. Alex Len had a couple of good rebounding efforts again. Mirza Teletovic really came on late in the year, but he's an unrestricted free agent. The other unrestricted free agents are really nobody notable to talk about. John Luehr, Ronnie Price, Chase Budinger, Corey Jefferson. The one team option at $1 million they have is John Jenkins, who they signed late in the year. I don't even know if they're going to keep him. But, you know, do you think Teletovic is kind of a key guy there, or do you think he's expendable?
He, to me, seems to be, like, the linchpin of everything because he's the only, like, true three on that team because TJ Warren isn't, you know, they tried to play him up. I mean, no, not TJ Warren. PJ Tucker. He's that 3-and-D guy. And, well, he didn't really do much. He's sort of regressing.
Yeah, he's going to be last year's contract next year.
You know, Teletovic, he's an actual scorer. So, you know, for the Netflix one, I would say I have two.
Okay.
First is Armageddon, because they blew the team up and the team imploded completely.
Armageddon's a sneaky, great action movie.
You know, that this team just melted from the inside. Mm-hmm. And then obviously we're just going to go with a cheesy pun for the second one of they're sort of hoping for the orange is the new black. They have a horrible situation, and they just sort of hope they can make the best out of it because Tyson Chandler is just going to bring them down for the next – he's there for what, three more years?
I didn't bring up Tyson Chandler, but that's one of the worst – in hindsight, that's one of the worst contracts they signed. I think you're the one who was kind of critical of it when it first was announced. And now,
yeah, because he doesn't fit the style of play, so we hope – we signed him and hope that somebody else will sign.
He had about $12 to $14 million per year through until 2019. Really, man, it's definitely one of the worser deals. I mean, he actually averaged under 9 rebounds a game. I think for the first time since like 2009 maybe.
Doesn't fit, and all he does is like Alex Len. You can see the flashes there. It's just he doesn't want to stay healthy,
and he's not strong. He's not a strong player. You know, he's just not built like a. If he were built like a Tyson Chandler, I would love Alex Len. He'd be physical. He's already a nasty physical guy, but he just doesn't have the muscle to hang in there all the time.
So right now, the worst case scenario for the Suns would be doing what they've been doing, and that would just be taking Jamal Murray, because you know Bledsoe, Knight, Booker, and Archie Goodwin, all Kentucky guards. So yeah, you sense a pattern and.
Yeah.
It's just they need to go big. They need to get somebody. They need an identity. And, you know, okay, we have Earl Watson. You gave him that 3-year deal, so the players seem to like him, so let's finally listen to the players as opposed to just screwing everything up. And
was there anything different about the Suns before when they had the Hornacek there and then when they had Earl Watson there?
No.
Or Booker?
It was really the emergence of Booker, which nobody really knew. And could it have been Hornacek sort of going, well, no, I don't want to play him? Or was it just one of those nobody sort of knew? But you can't have log jams at the same position when your needs are obviously elsewhere. And then, you know, it comes down to Tyson Chandler. You can't cut him and stretch provision him.
Mm-mm. Not this early.
Not this early, and that's just too much money to do it. So you're stuck with.
So you said the needs are definitely elsewhere. So what are the real dying need? You know, I can't believe I'm even saying this because offensively they were so good. You know, when they had Bledsoe, Isaiah Thomas, and Goran Dragic. But you know, now that page is turned, they need to do something on offense. I think they need another scoring forward.
They really, well, what they need to do is get rid of either Bledsoe or Knight because they're the same player. You need to get Booker in there because he's the one, he's too skinny to be a three, so, and then you're just really defensive liabilities if you put all three of those on the court together, so. You know, they have their work cut out for them, and there's no, you know, I'm not going to even bother mentioning cap space because everybody has max money these days. So it's just they really need to work on their team chemistry because of last year and the implosion.
Yeah. I mean, but I'll say this, after Markieff left, you know, they went a little smaller, and so it gave a little bit more playing time to Devin Booker, and he responded really, really well. He responded better than T.J. Warren did as a rookie, whereas I know T.J. Warren was a lower first-round pick, but at this point, once you're in the NBA, it's all about making a great impression regardless of how you got there. And for T.J. Warren, I just don't think he's the type of small forward that they're going to need in that position to be a scorer. I mean, small forward, we talked about this in a previous episode, small forwards getting to a point where it's getting really, really deep, and if you're really, really bad at a small forward spot, you're not going anywhere. And
didn't he get 30th in our list just by default? We didn't even bother looking at it. It's just like, oh no,
It was Tucker. We had Tucker there because he had started in training camp, and Tucker was in the bottom there along with Tony Snell. Tony Snell, I think, for the Bulls was the worst. You know, we had agreed he was the worst, and I think also Wesley Johnson for the Clippers. We just talked about with the Lakers.
So there's, yeah, they need work.
Okay, let's go ahead and move on to a team that actually, even though they had a kind of an interesting record at 29-53, they were 16-66 the previous year. So a 13-game improvement is not so bad, even though they had a lot of problems to start the season internally for reasons that were beyond their control. And that was the Minnesota Timberwolves. Flip Saunders was the president and became also the head coach of the team. He unfortunately passed away. And so the replacement was in the interim was Sam Mitchell. I can't believe Sam Mitchell became a head coach again in the NBA, but they were between a rock and a hard place. They started out okay, and then it was right around the month of January and February that they really started to fall apart.
Yeah, that was sort of, they played with their heart for the first time, then just the lack of talent. Mm-hmm. Timberwolves. Couple things come to mind is just Pekovic and his just constant injuries has been sinking them, and
that's a guy that I would think about stretch provisioning.
It's not his fault. It was just they signed him. He looked like, okay, that was a good signing, and then you can't stay healthy. Period.
Because he's not even like a Mozgov type, where you know they moved. Denver was able to move Mozgov early last season, and he became a pretty valuable piece for the Cleveland Cavaliers, and the Nuggets were able to get some value out of it through draft picks. With Pekovic, he's shown so little over the last three seasons that I don't think he has any value, regardless of how good his numbers were in 2012 and 2013.
I don't even think he's probably played 80 games in three seasons. That's his problem.
He played 12 games last year.
Yeah, that's just the thing. It's like, well, he was, like, you watched him.
He made $12 million, played 12 games.
It's great that, you know, okay, you had him, he wanted to stay. You got Towns as his replacement, and basically, you know, I'll probably toss this up to you for the Netflix suggestion, but they already did what they needed to do. They got Tibbs as their coach, so
I'll say the Breakfast Club, because it's a bunch of misfits. They don't I mean this in a way in which they're really, really young, but the potential is definitely there. So I think they just need a little bit of alone time, you know, to get together. And if they figure something out, if they find some kind of chemistry, the potential is absolutely there. I'm a lot more optimistic about these young guys than any of the young guys in Phoenix and in LA, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, because they have too many people just from all their draft picks. So, you know, unfortunately, that sort of is, you know, the problem is, well, we're trying to get all these minutes and they're just flashes here and there. But you get a nice coach who's going to teach fundamentals. You have Towns and Wiggins. That is going to be a dangerous team in a few years.
Should Karl Anthony Towns be the unanimous rookie of the year?
Yes.
Okay.
I don't, I was reading one thing. It's like one poll, like somebody picked Nikola Jokic as the other one lone non-vote. It's like, no, he is, mm-hmm. He should be unanimous. Nobody, Porzingis fell towards the ladder.
Injuries got to him, yeah.
Nobody else even came close to it.
Ricky Rubio, they actually got, in essence, a fully healthy season out of him. He was at eight assists. I believe he led the league in steals. If it wasn't him, it was Curry. It was 1-2. You know, free throw percentage is there. Shooting-wise, he's still god-awful. That's going to be his Achilles heel for the rest of his career. He's going to be a career 10-point-per-game guy. Shabazz Muhammad didn't play a lot last year, but when he did, he played well. This year, they got more play out of him, and he was still at double-digit scoring, which was a surprise. Zach LaVine, you know, a lot of people talk about the dunk contest wins, you know, the showdown with Aaron Gordon in the All-Star weekend, which was fantastic. But, you know, as a player, I kind of like what I see out of Zach LaVine. I think going forward, he's probably going to wind up being the starting point guard, you know, ahead of Rubio if, you know, when Rubio's time runs out on his contract in a few
months.
Well,
that's the thing is, you know, everyone's, well, Rubio's never going to shoot. With Wiggins, LaVine, and Towns, do you need to be a shooting point guard?
Not in this situation. No.
Yeah, so, well, we can't shoot, but you don't need him to. You need him to make those passes to get the open guy, and any of those can knock it down. You know, it was like when Rondo was with the Celtics. Okay, you had three other people who are good. Just pass it to them. Don't be the guy who needs to shoot. Oh, I need to shoot it. Oh, well, now look, you sort of can't.
Yeah. They're a great attacking team, so they get to the free throw line to sort of save themselves offensively. Definitely some improvement. Defensively, last year, they were the worst in the league, worse than even the Lakers. And they had some improvement, but they were 27th in defensive efficiency, so it's definitely baby steps there. The Tayshaun Prince, Kevin Garnett, Andre Miller, like mentors program, it kind of worked, but then they moved Andre Miller and let him go to San Antonio. Garnett's going to be there for another year. We're not sure about Tayshaun Prince. The only other guy who's up in the air in terms of his free agency is that there's a team option on Damian Rudeš. I don't even know if they're going to keep him.
They're not keeping him because they need to add that new draft pick in. And
so what you see here is what you get.
When there's nothing,
it's like the Breakfast Club. You're in the detention center and you can't get out.
The only one who needs to really start improving is Bielica. Mm-hmm. He sort of disappointed. I thought he would have been better this year.
Yeah, but his numbers were solid. He was like, I remember a couple games where he was frightening close to getting a triple-double, you know?
Yeah, but it just, I don't know. It could just be with that Minnesota plateau system where we need to get everybody minutes, but it just didn't seem like he was getting as the time he needed. And like I said, coming, he looked like somebody who could have been like a first-team all-rookie based upon his EuroLeague stuff, and it sort of did not go that way.
Is Gorgui Dieng, who's going to be a restricted free agent next season, is Gorgui Dieng in a situation where the Minnesota Timberwolves might have to consider keeping him at all costs?
No, this comes down to drafting and comes down to who they get. Because, right, you know, he can play with Towns, but you don't need to start maxing him out.
You're not going to find a lot of guys that average more than a block and more than a steal per game at center. I'll say that.
Yeah, but I don't see somebody sort of outpricing them for, you know, for his services.
Yeah, like if you go way over the top and give him like 18 mil, then you're going to say, oh, this was a mistake.
Yeah, I'm like, okay, well, you're okay, thanks for coming, but I don't see it being that unrealistic.
I'll go ahead and chime in on what they need. They absolutely need a 3-and-D guy, like a young Tony Allen type. I think that's a guy that could really help him out. Not Tony Allen, just like sort of like a clone of him.
Yeah, they could, because there's not much.
Their three-point shooting, especially after they moved Kevin Martin, has been so, so bad. I mean, they have been one of the worst three-point shooting teams in the league. You know, Flip Saunders was not a believer in it anyway. Sam Mitchell followed suit. Now comes in Tom Thibodeau, you know, as not only the head coach, but as the president of the team. So that's a huge, huge, you know, change
well,
the in
the
thing vibe.
About the difference here is he's smart and he has Scott Layden. As much as, you know, Knicks fans.
He's kind of like in the position that Jeff Bauer is in Detroit under Stan Van Gundy and Kevin Eastman.
But you have somebody else in to take the pressure off of him.
Yes.
You don't hear, like, you don't hear Doc Rivers having somebody to bounce ideas off or Budenholzer in Atlanta. It's just like, well, you have control. You're doing everything.
Rivers has Eastman, but, Lord, that's what I'm saying. Like, Jeff Bauer, like, how much control do they really have?
Yeah, it's just, you know, I need you to fill out this paperwork for me. There's no, he's not giving up any control to him.
I think Thibodeau's a great fit. You know, he kind of looks like the principal in a way from the Breakfast Club. A little fatter, though. But no, I think Thibodeau might really do well. Now, three-pointers were not his thing in Chicago either, you know, or in Boston when he was the defensive assistant. So I don't think that's really going to change in terms of how many threes they make. But, I mean, defensively, you've got to see improvement here, right? I mean, Thibodeau's teams have been so good defensively over the years, it would shock me if they weren't in the top 15.
I would not be surprised either.
You think that would be the right way to go with Wiggins, turn him into sort of a shutdown small forward?
I think the best part of Wiggins is not to try to turn him into anything. Mm-hmm. Just sort of let the natural flow and, you know, year three sort of dictate how he is. So I think if you sort of steer him to a direction, you might just be, making a bigger mess that you possibly could and sort of holding him back.
All right, and now we're going to move on to my team, the New Orleans Pelicans. They were 30-52. They had high expectations because a lot of people felt like Monty Williams was the coach that was holding them back from really expanding their offense and becoming a really dangerous team because their three-point percentage was so good. So Alvin Gentry comes in. He was an assistant with the Golden State Warriors and before that with the LA Clippers where they were like top offensive both years. He comes in, and they just start out with a thud. Anthony Davis sort of struggled early, got into it obviously late. He had I always forget the numbers. I think it was a 60-point 25 rebound game against the Detroit Pistons. That was just one example of how many great games Anthony Davis had. But I mean, the infirmary and the voodoo was out really, really bad on the New Orleans Pelicans. Injuries killed them. I don't think anybody played a full season, including Anthony Davis, who played 61 games. They were at a point at the end of the year where they had to play James Ennis. You know, Kendrick Perkins had to play major minutes. Dante Cunningham was starting. It was just rough going all around for the New Orleans Pelicans.
It was, you know, and then, you know, the problem was, you know, is Del Curry going to lose his job? And not to
Del Demps. Yeah. No, they just recently announced that he will keep his job in the Times-Picayune.
Right? Yeah, they announced that because as bad as his things were, you can't blame injuries on.
But how many times can you use it as an excuse?
Well, that's what happens when your entire team is made out of glass. And, you know, the only good thing for them is you're losing Gordon. You're losing.
Well, Gordon. Some people are saying that they're going to try to re-sign him. Which, if I get 3 or 4 more years of Eric Gordon, I might jump through this window.
Well, you know, if you get 3 years of Eric Gordon, cheap.
It depends on how cheap you're saying. I mean, because he just comes off the books off of a contract where he got $14 million per year guaranteed. You know, and
I don't see anybody giving him $14 million right now, but you never know. But
the other guy is Ryan Anderson, but you know, he had a very nice year. He played 66 games. He was one of the leaders in 3-pointers made, you know, true stretch four like he always was, 17 points per game. He was a sixth man a lot. You know, a lot of people considered him in the running for sixth man of the year, which was won by Jamal Crawford. But I don't know how pivotal it is to keep him. That's my problem with Ryan Anderson.
Well, the thing with Ryan Anderson and the movie for them, you know, I'm just going to go back to the puns and just go Saving Private Ryan, because their complete season was just a war-torn disaster. And Anderson's going to get paid because what does he do? He's a big – he's a stretch four, and that's going to be highly coveted. And you kept him. You traded him for nothing, and now you're going to really lose him. As much as you're like, well, we need to keep him, but he doesn't really – you know, he doesn't do much for you right now, considering the rest of the team is just made of glass.
Offensively, there were definitely improvements. They were 10th in points per game. They played a lot faster than they did under Monty. Monty was a very, very slow tempo coach, and they definitely picked it up. Three-pointers, here's what bothers me. They were 10th in three-point percentage, but they were 13th in three-pointers made. It was the same problem under Monty. The same problem happened with Alvin Gentry, where you want to see him take a bunch of – where everyone's saying, oh, well, they're going to launch a bunch of threes now that Gentry's the coach, and it didn't really happen that way. Defensively, they were bad. They were probably – I could almost make a case that they were the worst defensive team in the league along with the Lakers.
Well, the thing is, you know, as much as nobody likes the Omar Asik signing, he doesn't fit the system, and Gentry has made no attempt to try to get him in.
And the worst part, that 2018-19, that's a player option.
Yeah, but that'll be stretched by then, and by then it'll be cheap considering the salary cap. So, you know, as a backup, as sort of, you know, Davis insurance, he was fine, but then you change the system, and then you marginalize him. You know, I don't think he was terrible.
He didn't help their rebounding at all. Their shot blocking was one of the worst, even though they have one of the best shot blockers in the league in Anthony Davis. You know, it's just, man, I mean, he's just a black hole. He's a black hole in the front court.
And, you know, the problem is you just, you know, you put all your faith in Tyreek Evans and Drew Holiday, and it's just they can't play a half season even.
Now, Holiday bounced back late. It seemed like almost like he was trying to get his value back up, even though his contract doesn't expire until the end of next season, along with Tyreek Evans. Now, Evans had a really bad year in terms of health. You know, he only played 25 games. He had knee problems and such, so he was out for a good portion of the season, along with basically everybody else. But, you know, the real moment of truth, I think, you know, we have a lot of free agents here. I say we because, you know, I'm a Pels guy. You know, Tim Frazier, who was a fill-in, Norris Cole, Tony Douglas. A lot of these guys were kind of rented on the cheap because they needed fill-ins. We don't know if any of them are going to be back. Lonzo G is a player option. We'll see if he opts out. They'll probably keep Luke Babbitt because I feel like they really like his three-point shooting. But the moment of truth, I think, for the Pels is really next year when Holiday and Evans are off the books clean and they can totally start over, try to lure in somebody with big-time cap money to play alongside Anthony Davis.
Well, they have to start doing that now. They need to start getting players, period. And they
so their need is like a really good free agency strategy for next season?
No, they're starting with a free agency strategy this season and overall, because what they did this year is sort of double down and stand pat on their playoff team is let's keep this team intact. And then nobody stayed healthy. So it's, well, now we need to bring in some nice quality. But you can't just, you know, when your backup is Luke Babbitt and then Luke Babbitt needs to start, that's never a good sign. And, you know, first week Nate Robinson played and then they cut him because he, you know, isn't that good. But when you're early in week one and you have to sign somebody on a 10-day contract, not good.
Well, you know, with Anthony Davis, there's so many things that you can do because he can do so many things. So in terms of positional needs, especially with the free agency that they have going out there with Ryan Anderson, Eric Gordon, I don't want to say too much. You know, at the guard spot, they regardless of what people think of Drew Holiday and Tyreek Evans and how inefficient they can be, and how much time they miss, you're set at the guard spot next season. So positionally, I don't really know. Maybe forward, maybe another big. I'm not sure.
Need a straight shooter. They need Buddy Hield or Jamal Murray.
And that's a good one. But what I think they really need, and it's more metaphorical, is health. They need to get healthy.
They need health, and they need solid veterans. You need not to, you know, what they did is you could see their strategy was let's go all in on young, players. You know, we got Tyreek 4 years experience. We traded for Jrue Holiday coming off his All-Star. Young people. No, they need somebody who's sort of in their prime right now as like a 2-3 year sort of gap.
And there's so many guys that are going to be in that free agency range, not just this year, but in the following year. So there's just a lot of possibilities there is what I'm saying.
Yeah, it's not about hitting the home run. It's just about hitting solid.
You got like a Harrison Barnes here, a Nick Batum there, but they're all going to get overpaid. So nobody really knows. You know, DeRozan's got that player option that he's obviously going to opt out of because there's no way in hell he's taking $9 million. So like that's just one example in the small forward spot. And I didn't even count Kevin Durant and LeBron James. So, you know, it's going to be interesting, you know, if you're just looking at some of the free agents, but we'll get into that when we talk about free agency frenzy down the road, because there's just so many different scenarios. Let's go ahead and talk about another team that missed the playoffs. And, you know, you kind of had higher expectations for them than I did. I kind of had the expectation. My expectations were high in that I knew they were going to be really dysfunctional. Things went wrong and things kind of did go pretty wrong for them. That was Todd Weber's, you know, NBA team guest fill-in expert Todd Weber's Sacramento Kings. Did you enjoy watching the Kings?
No.
I mean, Netflix and chill example here is a pretty good one. I mean, it's got to be one of those like dysfunctional family things like August Assange Connie. Well, you know, that was a boring movie, so we need to find like a really funny dysfunctional family film. Do you have one like that?
It wasn't funny. It was just like just disasters and bizarre and nobody's in charge, and it was just like Home Alone, where it's just you know,
DeMarcus Cousins is Macaulay Culkin
pretty much, and just, you know, fighting off everybody, and you know, he could do only so much. And you know, I had high hopes because the team on paper looks like they could do something, and you had solid pieces, however, you just had undermining motives every which way.
It started from Jump Street with George Karl getting hired at the end of last year. Vivek Ranadev, I always forget how to pronounce his name. I think that's how you say it, the owner of the Kings. He brought him in. Cousins in his camp, you know, I had heard it had something to do with like the shoe companies. No one's really sure. But one way or another, Cousins did not want George Karl. It was obvious from the start. They signed, they shed all that cap room with that really down the road god-awful trade where they traded potentially three first-round draft picks so that they could try to make cap room for this past summer, and all they got out of it was a one-year deal from Rajon Rondo, Caron Butler, and Marco Bellinelli. So they bring in Rondo. Rondo had really high marks and assists. He led the league at 11.7, and he was a pretty defensively he was stealing the ball a lot. But man, in terms of just his overall play, he was very sloppy. He was just, it was basically an audition for people to show him how good he was as a passer now. And it was just really, really rough. DeMarcus Cousins had a great year. He's, you know, I could probably argue he's the best center in the NBA. But he but you know, very mercurial like he always was. You know, a lot of blow-ups. He, you know, had a couple of tiffs in the middle of the year with George Karl. Karl was eventually fired once the season was over after a couple of like situations where they thought Karl was going to get fired and he didn't. It was just very, very weird.
Yeah, it was just nobody was in charge, and you know, one guy liked him, but the other guy didn't, and you know, I'd say the best bet now is just get rid of Cousins. Start fresh.
You are getting rid of a perennial multi-time All-Star.
But you can't build around him. You can't. The team you have, you can't do anything with him. Mm-hmm. Get somebody who can get a system. As we've sort of seen now, superstars aren't winning the NBA. It's teams are winning. As much as, you know, as good as Golden State is, it's the fact that they're a team. You can't just win with one guy willing it through.
No, but one guy can really spearhead things for you if he's good enough. You got to build it correctly around him. That's the key.
But he's not a leader, and he just wants to, you know, I don't know. At first I was like, well, you need to keep him and sort of build around, but they can't build around him. They've shown just incapabilities, and McLemore has done nothing, unfortunately, and everybody else is just, I think you just sort of need to blow it up and start fresh.
What are the chances Rondo comes back?
I don't think very good.
Okay. a lot of player options here. Seth Curry, Steph's brother, he's already said he's going to opt out. We're not sure about Quincy AC and Caron Butler, who had an injury-riddled year, along with James Anderson, the shooter. We're not sure there. Kostas Koufos will be back. Willie Cauley-Stein showed a little bit, the rookie out of Kentucky. Great athleticism. I'm not sure if he can handle expanded minutes. I think that's
his problem. He gave you what we expected from him. It wasn't, you know, nobody's expecting a home run pick. Yeah, it was just, he was solid. The only real good story was sort of Caspery.
Well, to me, I thought the two guys that played very well and were very steady for them were Rudy Gay and Darren Collison. Now, I thought Collison had a really good year. Field goal percentage, three-point percentage, free throw percentage. He was like in the top 30 in all of those things. He was the steadier of the two point guards between him and Rondo, even though Rondo's numbers were more inflated.
Yeah, but, you know, Collison isn't going to, you know,
move the needle. Yeah.
Yeah, it's, you know, their best bet is, you know, you're going to get Chris Dunn probably. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you have your point guard of the future, and you just need to, I don't know, the problem is they just need organizational structure, and that's why sort of blowing it up is just, let's get a team, let's get our team, not just, you know, every year it's just, you know, misaligned pieces that just don't fit. Like, Rudy Gay doesn't really fit that team, and Cousins, Gay, and Rondo, it's just like, yeah, they're talent, but it's just like they're all random.
So in terms of the need, like the one thing that the Kings need, what would you say?
A calmer owner.
Okay.
An owner who takes yoga lessons.
Well, they tried. Supposedly, minority ownership looked into trying to overtake the stake from him. And
that was just rumbling how they're not happy with him. And
yeah,
you know, they always
a scare tactic. Yeah. But so you know, yours is more of a generality. For me, you know, at the guard spot, I think they can handle one more year with the way that they are. Even if they sign Rondo to like something like at $18 million, I think they can handle him down the road. I he's incredibly he's become a very inconsistent defensive player. Even though he did average, like I said, he averaged just under two steals. But for me, I would say they just need. They need a shooter. You know, you had said that with the Pelicans, and I would say this too. I just think they need a shooter.
Yeah, they need a lot. So yeah. It's sad.
A set 3-point shooter would be really good for them. Rebounding wise, especially with Cousins there, they're okay. You know, another four along with him and Willie Cauley-Stein might help them. Would you say? I know Kostas Koufos is there, but he didn't really do much.
He's a solid backup, and, you know, Quincy Ace, he's also a backup. And, you know, you have the depth, and it's just sort of, you know, Rudy Gay isn't getting any younger. And, you know, you mentioned the trade. You're like, how horrible it was. But the thing is, as long as the 76ers are god-awful and worse.
Yeah, the right to swap in
16 and 17
doesn't
mean anything.
But they lose the 18 first-round pick, and it's pretty likely that the Kings are still going to be bad in 2018.
It's likely, but you never know. And a couple, you know, solid decisions, a couple smart drafts, it might change. But just swapping picks doesn't mean anything this year. And player they gave away has done nothing in Philly.
Stauskas. I am less optimistic about the Kings now than I was last year, at this point last year. That's the one thing I'll say.
Agreed.
Let's talk about a team that's a little bit more optimistic. They actually kind of surprised. They were actually mathematically in the Western Conference playoff hunt until like the last week of the season, which shocked everyone. And then, you know, they dropped, they went 1-4 in the month of April. And that was the Denver Nuggets with their new head coach, Mike Malone. They made the trade for Ty Lawson. They doubled down on keeping Kenneth Faried. They drafted Emmanuel Mudiay, you know, in the first round or the lottery to replace Ty Lawson. It was a little rough percentage-wise for Mudiay. He just could not shoot the ball. He was not mentally prepared to be in that position. But he made some strides late. Will Barton had a really good year. Gallinari, before his injury, was playing really well. He was nearing 20 points per game. There was just, and then they had a lot of other sort of people coming in as rookies, like you know, Joseph Nurkic, second year player, Nikola Jokic, who you just talked about, Jeffrey LaVerne. They brought in another guy, Topain, out of France. Yeah. They just had a lot. They were able to do a lot more, and they did all this without Wilson Chandler, who was out for the year with a hip injury.
Yeah, that sort of hurt them. Was if they had Chandler, I think the team would have been a little better than
they wouldn't
were.
Have had to play Gary Harris so much.
Yeah, that, you know, Harris's numbers are sort of a shock. You know, Moutier, they're like, oh, he's statistically the worst player of all time. And, you know, he led all rookies in assists. And then it's just you learn by playing. And as long as you see improvement, and then they have that, you know, like you said, that three-headed beast with Jokic, Nurkic, and LaVerne. And, you know, I think they're going to try to trade one of those guys, probably Nurkic.
Yeah, Daryl Arthur will probably opt out at 3 mil. I think he'll go somewhere else. So
yeah, but he wasn't really providing anything.
The team, there's a team option for LaVerne. They're likely going to use that. DJ Augustin, they got in late. I can't remember the trade that they did. It involved the Thunder. I think it was the Randy Foy deal, am I right?
Yes.
They traded Foy for Augustin. And so do you think it's important for them to keep him? He averaged almost 5 assists in 28 games.
Well, if he wants to be back cheap, yeah, but there's really no...
You still got Nelson.
Yeah, you have Nelson, you got Chandler coming back, so there's... You know, and you could always pick up another shooting guard elsewhere, so...
Have we seen the last of Mike Miller?
We've been saying that for years. You know, if he's a good bench guy, he's a good teacher, and he's there to teach the young people, sure. You know, and also for Reed, you know, oh, well, his contract's horrible, which now looks friendly, but, you know, it's just finding his system. Oh, his numbers were down. They're well-rounded, and he is a great hustle guy still, and, you know, they have a lot to look forward to.
You know, it's become, like, rite of passage to, like everything the Portland Trailblazers do, because you want to support a smaller market team like Portland. But the trade where they got Aaron Aflalo and they traded Will Barton and their first round pick, that's looking like one of the worst trades in the history of the franchise.
Yeah, it's not.
It's sneaky awful.
It is pretty sneaky. But
Barton really turned a corner in Denver. I mean,
he
really
did, and you know, their international scouting is probably one of the best in the league. Just looking at these
and
people,
and Moutier would be in that run too because he played in China, so that kind of counts.
That's what I'm saying. He's there, and I don't have a movie for them.
I'm trying to think. It's going to be something where, you know, it's going to be one of those movies where someone's, like, trying to get over a drug addiction, but it's got, like, a happy ending kind of thing.
Like, they have hope to look for. It's just, you know, it's the... I don't have one for them.
Well, we'll just not have one
for them. I can't... Maybe they just don't need to watch Netflix.
It's got to be something marijuana related, since we're in Colorado.
I don't know.
Let's get off of this. now their draft picks this year is just wild. They, you know, their lottery pick, they get to swap with the Knicks. So whatever the higher pick that the Knicks between them and the Knicks are, they're going to get the Knicks pick, and that lower pick is going to go to the Raptors thanks to Andrea Bargnani. Then they got the Rockets pick from the Ty Lawson deal, which turned out to be number 15. They got the Blazers pick from that Aflalo deal that we talked about. Then they have the number 39 pick, they have the number 53 pick, and they have the number 56 pick. So they have a lot of picks to work with if they want to move up. So what do you think it is that they definitely need the most?
They don't really need more young players.
Getting a veteran over there is going to be hard. The cap space, it's going to be hard.
It's going to be hard, but that's the problem is they don't, you know, you're going to go with Moutier, you like Barton, Gallinari, and, you know, you got Nurkic, Jokic. Maybe a two or a stretch four. They don't really have much in the 3-point shooting from the big men at all.
Yeah, their 3-pointers made where they were 20th, and their 3-point percentage was 24th, which is pretty bad.
So I don't know. Maybe Rocky for the Nuggets, because they're still early in the game. They're still sort of crappy. The small town guys.
Well, do the new generation. It could be Creed, but Creed's not on Netflix yet. You'd have to watch one of the bad Rocky
sequels.
You can
go with Creed, and it'll be there eventually. So
have you seen Creed?
No.
Fantastic movie. Like, I was actually sort of like, when people were talking about it, I was kind of like, you know, sometimes I like deflect when people are talking about a movie and they love it, and I'm like, eh, I'll wait and see. Then I finally saw it, like, months after it was out on video, and I loved it. I thought it was a great, great movie. Fantastic.
It was an option on the plane, but I went with The Martian instead.
Martian is incredibly long, but a very good movie as well. So, solid, solid trade-off.
So that was, I'm like, I was there, but I went with that.
That's not, that is not an Aflalo Barton trade. That was more of a, well, you know, Ty Lawson, that's looking like a steal too, you know, in a way.
Well, they just had to get rid of him. The fact you got literally.
But they got a number 15 pick for a guy that never even stayed with the Rockets. You know, now he's with the Indiana Pacers.
Yeah, so that's, again, you make solid deals and, you know, you don't
And we all know the Melo one is just coming back to, like, reward them year after year. It's just amazing how much they got out of that deal.
Well, you know, the Knicks got good, you know, they got a good player out of it, too. It's just they did nothing around him.
Yeah. So, for the
next.
Yeah, next off, the only, like, I was, right before I leave, like, the one positional need, you know, it's like the third time we said this in a row, they need a shooter. They need a shooter, and they need I think they need another big man. I know it sounds crazy, but I think they need another big man.
A stretch big man. They need a three-point. Like, Ryan Anderson went there. Mm-hmm. That would be a dangerous – because you had the problem is Fareed and, you know, the Jokic-Nokic.
The rumor with Rhino is that – that's his nickname down here – is Sacramento, because that's where he's from. And it's actually a decent fit because he could kind of take the other big away from double-teaming on Cousins. So, I mean, that was just a theory. We don't know. That was during the trade deadline, but, you know, that never came to pass. Rhino stayed with the Pelicans. But moving on, we're going to talk about the one team that just missed the playoffs. They were there all the way until the last night. They were mathematically eliminated, so they decided to have, like, the worst defensive performance ever against Kobe Bryant and the Lakers, and that was the Utah Jazz. You know, I got to start with that one because even though it's so short-sighted and so ADD for us to talk about one game and being the last game, and it is the game that people are going to remember that team for, unfortunately, not the, you know, not the fact that they had a really, they were a really good defensive team and they were just, they barely missed the playoffs and Gordon Hayward had a really good year and all that is true. But was there anything about that performance that sort of made you think deeper about the Jazz?
No, they did what they sort of did, and that's the problem of young teams where...
They were the youngest team in the league.
Yeah, and again, the problem is, you know, it was Kobe's night, and you could sort of, you could see it coming. And but it's, you know, you're battling injuries, and when you're relying on Shelvin Mack to be your starting point guard by the end of it, and the Troy Burke doesn't seem to be an answer there, and... Burks couldn't stay healthy again.
Trey Burke might get traded. I think they're going to find a way to get value from him and trade him for a veteran. Try to get somebody in there to give him some advice.
He has, you know, he has flashes still, but with, you know, Raul Neto was sort of a surprising, you know, that he did anything there. And
yeah,
with Exum coming back, you know.
That's the big asterisk there, that they didn't have Dante Exum because of the knee injury. Yeah, they
didn't have it. You love Hood.
I think Rodney Hood's just got a lot of potential there. He's going to be there for at least a couple more years. He averaged almost 15 points per game as a sophomore in the NBA. That's impressive.
Yep, and then, you know, Hayward is by far the most underrated. He is the underrated player in the
NBA.
And
athletically, he's way better than people think. Way better. I remember quite a few nasty, like, dunks that Gordon Hayward would throw down on people in transition. The problem is they don't run a lot of transition because their pace is so slow. Defensively, they were second in points allowed. They were eighth in efficiency. Their block shots per game was 13th, thanks a lot to Rudy Gobert, who averaged over two blocks a game. But they were so slow. Do you think it's important for Quinn Snyder to have that team play at a very slow pace because of how young they were and to have them sort of learn instead of just kind of throwing caution at the wind like Denver sort of did?
No, because they're a step beyond them, so you sort of need to have a style as opposed to let's just get the guys minutes for the sake of having minutes. Like, you have, you know, Denver just has young players. You have Hayward and Favors who are, you know, max contract cornerstones. You have, you know, Gobert who is the sort of surprise coming out of nowhere.
what is it that they really need in Utah? Like, you know, they have a lot of things here. You know, Derek Favors is still a terrific player, okay? And at $11 million per year, he's actually a bargain now. You know, I'm sure – I got a feeling we're going to see a jump out of Rodney Hood. If they get a full season out of Alec Burks, that's an accomplishment. And Shelvin Mack will probably be back. They'll probably pick up his team option. Their only free agents going into the summer are Trevor Booker and Chris Johnson. So what is it that they really need?
They don't need anything. They're sort of getting a logjam now with Lyles sort of being, you know, there's really no room for him where he is. So, you know, you have all the players you sort of need. You just need.
So it's like, you know, the Orlando situation in their front court, only they're
just Stan Pat and, you know, let's try to do it again next year. So, you know, what's a good, like, coming of age movie?
Well, we already
did Breakfast Club,
which is more of like the dysfunctional type that turned into a
Almost Famous.
Well, Almost Famous is about one guy while all the other nutcases were messing up their lives, you know. But Almost Famous is one of my favorite movies ever. Cameron Crowe from the 70s road rock movie. That's one of your favorites too.
It was good. I have no complaints with it. But
so Gordon Hayward would. Who would be the young one in this group? Would be Gobert.
Yeah.
Coming out of France, and then all of a sudden he's coming into the league, and all of a sudden he's a rock star, and Gordon Hayward's the golden god.
You know, they're right there, just at the cusp, and mm-hmm. you know, they're ready, they're poised. Mm-hmm. But yeah, they have the most, obviously, since it came down the last day. They have the most hope of pretty any team in this list, I mean, even some playoff teams. I have more. There's more hope for the Jazz than I could say for the Grizzlies or the Rockets.
But I go back to that Laker game, and you know, you look for the poise. But man, I mean, there are things about that game that just make me think. You know, they're not ready for the big time yet, because that was a big time game for them. You know, like, this is a game where millions of people are watching you. You know, maybe for the first time ever.
That's the thing with young teams is, you know, veterans know how to win, and veterans know how teams have to pull out. Yeah. If you don't know how to do it, you know, we see the same thing now with this, you know, the Celtics. It's just a young team. Well, we don't know that next gear to kick it into.
And if you remember, Almost Famous has that great scene where they think the plane is going to crash and they start confessing things, and then it just sort of stabilizes and everything's back to normal. I just hope for the Jazz that there's not some sort of a situation where they get like the Suns did, where they get struck by injuries, or they, you know, there's some sort of a malcontent player on the team and they feel like they have to make some sort of a big move. And, you know,
that's why they don't really need to add anybody.
Exactly.
Have your players, you have your bench.
Don't fall for the fake plane crash.
Maybe get a nice veteran, you know, leader type guy, not like, I'll even just say like a Mike Miller, just a good all around teammate. He's not going to take minutes away from your young guys. Just you need a nice, solid, you know, good vibes.
Okay. And then we're going to be wrapping up this episode a little bit with just a roundup of specific questions about amongst all the teams that we just talked about for this one. We talked about the LA Lakers, the Phoenix Suns, the Minnesota Timberwolves, the New Orleans Pelicans, the Sacramento Kings, the Denver Nuggets, and the Utah Jazz. What player are you going to be keeping an eye on the closest next year, for whatever reason, amongst all these teams?
Oh, it's definitely going to be Wiggins and Towns. If Towns, considering what he did in his rookie year, if he could turn that up to the next notch, well, he's now going to just be in all everything.
I'll keep an eye on Moutier, because if he can improve his shooting percentage and they get another good year out of Barton and Gallinari, all of a sudden you've got a Nuggets team that can make some moves. I mean, they could literally make moves. They could trade some assets and find some, and they got enough cap space already at over $30 million where they could really get a good player there if things start looking optimistic. Team that you think will make the play has the best chance of making the playoffs next season?
Well, the answer is obviously the Jazz. Mm-hmm. And outside of the Jazz, you know, the Timberwolves aren't ready.
Here's the problem with the Timberwolves. Even if they do another 13-game improvement like they did last season, what would their record would only be at they would be at 42 wins. 42 wins might get you in. So, I mean, but it's 50-50 there, because there are years where the West is so good that you could have like a 7-game over .500 record and you still might not make the playoffs. You know, it depends on the climate.
Yeah, basically the only one I could see is the Jazz. You can make an argument for the Nuggets, but they're still too young. Pelicans are still made of glass, and I don't expect them to be a really splashy free agency, as you know, some people have been sort of claiming. If you do lock up Anderson, there goes all your cap space. So,
For me, I'll stick with Minnesota. I think Minnesota has a better than decent chance of making the playoffs if they can keep the improvement, and especially with Tom Thibodeau. I think Tom Thibodeau was such an X factor. He is the biggest X factor in terms of a coaching hire than any other coaching hire this year. I don't even have to wait for the season preview next year to say that.
Agreed.
He is going to really turn it around for them. And I think that's going to be wrapping it up. Did you have any sort of things that you wanted to chime in about with the Western Conference teams before we got out of here?
Nope. I just remember when, you know, remember like, well, we need to do the top 16 and the Western Conference is more dominant, and just a lot of, you know, we see a lot of dysfunction here, and there's a lot of teams with not a lot of hope right now.
Yeah.
So.
I mean, I think the Suns and the Lakers look particularly hopeless.
Suns, Lakers, Kings, even to an extent, the Pelicans.
But if you see the Kings, like, their record was better than the Pelicans and Timberwolves, but I think that was because of boosted expectations.
Well, it's
like,
because they also have to play them. If you play the Lakers four times, you can probably beat them.
Everybody plays everybody. Divisions don't matter anymore. So
divisions don't matter, but I'm saying you're beating on the West Coast people. You're only playing the East a lot less, and since the East was better this year.
You see a team that might fall apart, like the Pelicans here, or like a team that really might bottom out.
A team that might bottom out? I don't see that, as all these teams, the ones that have bottomed out, have bottomed out. There's really not much more bottom you could get from the Suns.
Yeah, the Timberwolves already bottomed out.
Yeah.
They bottomed out like three times.
The only one who can bottom out this list is really the Kings. And they've already just lowered our expectations already. We're going to, you know, we come to the next round of these first round losers of that, their Netflix and chill. Yeah, we're going to have a lot to talk about that time.
Okay. Any movies that you have, any movies, I don't know if it has to be deemed with a Western Conference, but any other, any Netflix film that you would like to suggest for all the basketball fans?
Basketball? It's half basketball, half baseball.
Is that the one where Bob Costas tells the other announcer to feel his nipples?
Yes. I had to end with something just stupid.
So. I don't even know the rules. The rules is like you hit it, you have to hit it, but you have to distract the guy who's hitting it or something like that.
Yeah, you just have to make a free throw and the other guy can play just verbal defense.
Oh my god. All right, we got to get out of here for this one. But we will be back pretty soon with Netflix and Chill, the Eastern Conference edition, which might not be as bad as the West, but to be continued there. But on behalf of Adam Murray, St. Reach.